Up next is the best of the Larry Miller Show from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Lee Rayburn inviting you to join us starting Monday, July 6th, as we continue Larry's legacy. It may be my name, but this will always be your show. The Lee Rayburn Show, live from 11 to 1 on WPR News.
Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Miller here. And you know what? In case you haven't noticed, the outside is now the new inside. Many people are enjoying their yards more by adding living space outside. And we're going to be talking about some of the trends and answer your questions about enhancing your yard here on Garden Talk. And our guest today is Joe Kressel. Joe is a landscape architect and the owner and president of Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa. He won many landscaping awards in his 40-plus years in the business and certainly can help you with your landscaping questions. Considering adding a patio or other outdoor garden feature? Do you have a difficult landscaping problem? Joe Kressel, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
You've been working in the industry for a long time, and Hawks Landscape has been around for 150 years. Yeah. That is
it's a rare. Long time.
That's rare. How'd the company get started?
Well, it started actually in Rochester, New York, in 1875. That's 1 year before Custard's last stand at the Little Bighorn. Shortly after its inception, one of the owners, there were three owners at the time, and one of the owners is originally from Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, and they opened up a branch in Wauwatosa. And the first farm was a 20-acre farm at 59th Street. There was 20 acres between Wisconsin Avenue and Blue Mound. And that went on for many years, and then they bought another parcel at the corner of 91st and North Avenue, and that was 40 years. And it grew out to be a pretty large operation. There were over 400 salespeople in the early days working for Hawks Nursery, and they were salespeople across all of northeastern United States. And plant material would be shipped out in the spring and fall, bare root and crates. And then they would go to on the railroads to various locations. And salespeople would, you know, walk door to door trying to sell plant material.
Oh, my goodness.
And oftentimes the salespeople were the postmasters of small towns. And they all had this beautiful sales book that we had. And the sales book had some of the first color photos. And so people would be blown away by seeing color renditions. Actually, they were colored plates. They weren't actually photographs at the time. And people would be blown away by the color and of the plant material and be very excited.
So that's things have changed a bit over the years.
They have changed and dramatically in many ways, and then in other ways not so much. We've got some letters from one of our salespeople that in 1894, and he was the sales rep for Walworth County, and he would talk about his Monday letter back to the home office, and he would talk about what it was like being a salesperson and selling plant material and how high-quality plant material and the good commissions that he would earn and stuff like that. But he would also talk about the weather and how the weather affected and the late spring and early springs and late falls and lack of snow in the wintertime and, you know, all the things that we worry about today, he had the same issues. But one thing that was a little bit different was he would talk back to the younger salespeople that they would go from farm to farm on horseback. And at the end of the night, wherever they ended up, they would always expect him to go back on his horse and go home. But this one gentleman, he said the best way to sell plant material is to walk from farm to farm. And at the end of the night, you'd always get a nice warm place to sleep in the barn on some beautiful smelling hay. And then in the morning at the breakfast table was the place to sign a contract. And so it's changed. We don't do that anymore.
Oh, so do you grow your own plants yet?
No, we gave up growing probably in about 95, 96. The property, we originally, where we're currently located on Watertown Plank Road, we originally had 38 acres there, and now we're just down to 8 acres. And we're at 122nd Watertown Plank Road, which is very close to Elm Grove. After World War II, the business kind of changed a little bit. It went through a lot of transitions over the year with the Depression. And during the Depression, we became more of a local, regional nursery versus a national sending plant material to the East Coast and stuff like that. Everything became much more local, and that's when we start doing landscape design and construction a little bit more. Actually, the first landscape architect that ever worked for a nursery worked for Hawks Nursery back in 1926. And he claims, and I met the gentleman, he was 100 some years old, 102 years old.
Oh,
I met
goodness.
Him in 94. And he was very proud of the fact that he claimed to be, he graduated from Harvard, and he was very proud to say that he was the first landscape architect that actually worked for a nursery. And prior to that, it was two different professions. It was landscape architecture and landscape construction or installation nursery type work. Yeah.
But you've combined that with your business, Hawks Landscape. We have,
and we've gone through a lot of transitions as well. I purchased the property or the company in 93, and immediately it's a long story, and I won't go into it in trying to acquire the business. And I started managing in 92, but when we finally put everything together, the buildings that we were purchasing were being condemned by the city, so we had to build a new building, and we built a new state-of-the-art garden center, and we had a lot of different divisions. We had, five or six different divisions. We had a florist and arborist and chemical applications, and pretty elaborate. Well, we found over the years that it was more profitable for us to be really good at one thing.
Yeah.
And so we rent our space to Steins now, and they operate a garden center of our property. And then we dropped the arborist work and the chemical applications and the floral business. And now we just strictly work with design and construction and maintenance.
Design, construction, and maintenance.
Right.
And just do that well.
And we do it really well, I like to believe. And it's much easier for me. And it was part of my retirement plan, too, to scale down and not have so many things going on.
Well, here you are, a landscape architect. And, by the way, a degree in landscape architecture from the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Correct. And this is my 50th year working as a landscape architect.
So how has your job changed over time, in terms of the landscape side of things?
You know, I'm really lucky. I've got wonderful employees that I work with, and I've got a chief operating officer and who pretty much runs the business now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just do what's fun for me. And and what's fun for me is designing landscapes and selling landscapes. And I still get involved in the management of the company, but I am able to do a lot of things that I just love doing, and that's landscape design.
And speaking of that, I think the interest in that, I think, has picked up considerably over the last 5-10 years.
You're correct. People are looking at more highly maintained landscapes. They're getting more extensive, and people are spending more time living outside and living outdoors. And you know, it's kind of changed over the years too. And people are looking for the outdoor living room that we always talked about. Well, the outdoor living rooms are now have kitchens and fire pits and everything else.
And those have become a fairly popular addition, outdoor kitchens, for example. I mean, you think about Wisconsin, there's a lot of the time of the year you're not going to be able to use it, are you?
You know, I thought the same thing for years. I go, outdoor kitchen, not here in Wisconsin. You know, everybody, you know, was promoting those years ago in California. They were, you know, really picking up in the southern states on the East Coast. And I thought, oh, nobody will ever want an outdoor kitchen in Wisconsin. Well, I was wrong. I have one myself, and my wife and I just love it to be outdoors. You know, you come home from work in the evening, and instead of sitting in the kitchen, you know, we're together outside and being in a space with the birds tweeting and you know, life all around us, watching the plants grow and flowers blooming. It's really wonderful. And you know, in the past, you know, my wife would be busy in the kitchen and I would be watching TV or reading or doing something else, and we wouldn't be talking. There wasn't conversation. And now when we're outside, we're full of conversation. You know, we talk, and you know, it's great for every relationship. It's wonderful.
Our guest today, Joe Kressel, a landscape architect and owner and president of Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa. It's great to have him with us. And we've been talking a lot about the history of Hawks and just started talking about the landscape side of things. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you along for Garden Talk here on WPR News. Right now, we're taking a look at landscaping with Joe Kressel, who is a landscape architect and owner and president of Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa. Have you had some work done through Hawks or maybe another company? Jake emailed with a question, what's an outdoor kitchen other than a grill? And that kind of leads me into my next question, which was, what kinds of things you consider when adding an outdoor kitchen?
You can make it just like your kitchen indoors, you know, really. Mm-hmm. Our kitchen that we have at our house is got two grills. It's got a big green egg, which is kind of a smoker, and plus a gas grill that's, you know, hooked up to natural gas. And then we also have a refrigerator. We have a sink with a faucet, and then we have cabinets and a drawer for trash and garbage and paper towels and a place to put all of our grilling tools, you know, different various drawers and compartments. And we don't keep any food necessarily out in the any of the cabinets, but you know, you're afraid of varmints,
the squirrels coming and opening it.
But we do keep the refrigerator full, and it works out great.
You've got those appliances and all those features. They're going to be sitting on something, paving material, I assume, of some sort. What are paving materials that are good for patios?
You know, there's so many options. There's so many options, and it's really, you know, dependent on the budget. And It can be as simple as compacted gravel to concrete, concrete pavers, clay pavers, natural stone, wood decks. There's so many different opportunities, and it all depends on the situation and you know, what the grades are and what the budget is, because the more exotic the materials become, the more expensive things become.
Yeah. Just to go along with that, Katrina emailed to say the previous owner of her house covered a lot of surfaces with river stone. And the fact of the matter is the weeds are coming up through the river stone. And yeah. What's the best way to keep the weeds down that grow through this? And what should probably have been done ahead of it so that that wouldn't have been the case?
Yeah, you know, weeds are inevitable in landscapes, and they're really tough to control. If somebody put river stone around your home, they probably put it over a weed barrier like DeWitt or Typar. And one of these fabrics, they're kind of a semi-permeable fabric, they do keep the amount of weeds to growing up through from the soil. However, after years in weed seeds and debris fall in between the rocks and create another soil on top of it, and the weed seeds begin to grow, and you're going to get weeds no matter what. The best, easiest way, well, not the easiest, but one of the best ways is to just pull the weeds. They can be treated chemically with Roundup or Roundup-type products like a razor or other products that control weeds. And then there's organic products such as vinegar is oftentimes used to control weeds in planting beds. You got to be careful with all the chemicals that you plant, including the vinegar, that you're not burning your plant material and that you keep it well enough away from the leaves and branches of the plant material so you're not killing it. In Canada and a lot of European countries, they ban chemicals like Roundup, and everything is done mechanically or organically. And so gardening is kind of an art, and it does take time and energy.
What are they, when it comes to planting material, what are some of your favorites for patios?
Well, trial and error, I've learned a lot of lessons over the years. And one of my things that I used to do is I used to like, oh, well, we'll put really showy plant material around the patio. Like serviceberries, which are just gorgeous. You know, they have the beautiful early blooms, and then they have the little berries that are the size and taste of blueberries with a beautiful, you know, autumn, fall coloration. It's really a multi-seasonal plant. But unfortunately, it is messy. When those little berries, you know, fall onto your patio and stain it, if you have limestone or some white kind of material, concrete, they'll be staining it, and then the birds just flock over it, and they eat all the berries, and then they defecate on the patio and your patio furniture. So now I've kind of changed my attitude towards that and try to stay away from the berry-producing plants and the messy plants and try to keep things as ornamental and showy as possible. Oftentimes with annual flowers, hydrangeas, plant material that gives you a lot of color is, for me, is the most fun.
Ralph emailed, can you give an example of something you've done in a small backyard? What's the least amount of space that you've had to work with?
Oh, smaller spaces are some of the most fun spaces to work with because there's so much you can do. You know, you can make a very intensive landscape in a small space that sometimes people with large spaces couldn't afford to do because of the scale. Because the scale is small, you can use really high-end materials. You can create really lovely spaces. And some of the best work that I think I've done has really been with small spaces. And, You know, you do a lot of bordering. You do curbs and the planting beds. You know, you might have a patio that you might do a brick curb around. You can use bluestone and, you know, a lot of natural materials. And you know, maybe, you know, where you might, in some situations, try to create an evergreen or a plant material fence, you might go to a very highly designed, well-designed fence and soften the fence with plant material in front of it, but to gain privacy. So creating unique and interesting shapes. And one of the things that in designing patios that I always like to make sure, and sometimes people, they don't think of furniture and how are they going to use the patio and where are they going to put, you know, the table, and how big is the table going to be, and how many people do you want to entertain? And these are all things that you need to consider when you're designing any space, but mostly when you're designing a small space. So really working in the furniture and designing what furniture is going to be in your space and how you're going to use your space is really important to understand that on the onset, so that you don't end up with a space that is all traffic pattern and you can't use it because you're just going from one space to the next. That's one of my biggest pet peeves when I see things that are poorly designed.
I'm thinking about that. If the furniture is too big for the, and you've got too many tables or whatever, mm-hmm. you're suddenly.
you got to draw it all in right in the beginning. You know, it's something that it's got to be part of the design to begin with.
Let's talk about that whole process for a minute. For those who might be interested in we've been thinking about a patio. What happens when somebody calls Hawks to get an estimate on an outdoor project?
Well, you know, it's call in. One of our architects and designers would typically call back, and sometimes, you know, especially in the spring, it might take a week or two before we're able to get back to you because we do get a lot of calls early in the spring and early summer. And then, you know, a designer, architect will meet at your house and discuss your project. Typically, you know, over the phone, try to discuss what your needs are and what you're looking for so that we can, you know, align you with the correct proper person to, you know, to handle your design challenge. And then someone will come and meet at your house and discuss budget. You know, budget is one of those things you should keep in mind. How much do you want to spend on, you know, and how elaborate and how do you want to use your property? There's a lot of questions that a designer is going to ask you, and there's a lot of things that go in to making a good design. How is the environment? Is it windy? Is it exposed to a lot of sun? Is there a lot of shade? Are there walnut trees above it? There's a lot of environmental factors that we have to consider when designing a space. And so knowing kind of what you want the space to do for you and is very important. So talk it over with your spouse and come up with a general idea of what you'd like to do.
Yeah, and it's probably have a set of questions.
Right.
For the
designer that comes and helps you out. And then we'll go back and design it and discuss budgets it's a process.
It's interesting to me because not long ago I was talking with a guy who does, his company does interior design and fixing restoring somebody's kitchen what needs to be redone or something like that. And he has his process is design build.
Sure.
And it sounds like and in his case, homeowner would hire him to or ask him for design, and he would very discuss this.
Primarily, that's what we do as well. You know, we don't do bid work. You know, big commercial projects. Primarily, we focus on residential design build, but we also do, you know, more you know, several years ago, I redesigned the Alverno College campus. You know, so we got into bigger designs where, you know, the campus was just a mess. It was all filled with parking lots and there was no circulation. And it was just, they were adding one building after the next. And so we redesigned the circulation throughout. We got rid of a lot of the parking lots, turned it into playing fields and soccer fields and ballparks and built a parking structure which accommodated the parking and made the campus so much more beautiful instead of looking, and now it looks like a college campus versus a drive-up community college.
That was done to some extent. A guy by the name of Al Fish was a manager here at the UW-Madison, and he did a survey of the amount of parking spaces.
At
the UW-Madison.
Oh, yeah.
And the surface parking was huge amount of space being taken up, and then you got all these cars not looking so good anyway.
Remember Lot 60 before the medical complex? That was massive.
But did the same thing.
Yeah.
And when new buildings would come in, the parking would go underneath, or there would be a parking structure that took up a far less space and allowed for, as you're talking about.
Well, and just beautification. And, you know, it creates a more friendly, welcoming environment to walk amongst landscaping and beautiful walkways and vignettes. It changes your life.
Vicki emailed to ask what shrubs are good for a privacy screen. It's full sun to part shade.
You know, traditionally, viburnums are always a very good option for screening. However, right now they're challenged. We've got a pest that's viburnum beetle, and it's chewing on the leaves. And so you're going to have to use a systemic on them if you plant many of the viburnums, with the exception of prunifolia, blackhaw viburnum, and maybe I don't see too much of it on the Korean spice viburnum. But dogwoods are good. Red and gray dogwoods are great. There's for flowering displays, you know, in the sunnier locations, bridal wreath. And one of the things that there was a sales book that was published in 1932. By the sales manager of Hawk's Nursery, and he always promoted bridal wreath, spireta, and privet. Make all your hedges bridal wreath and privet. That's for flowering type plants. And then there's some hydrangeas that get pretty big nowadays that tolerate some shade, and like the limelight hydrangeas gets 8 feet tall, and that can create a nice buffer. It takes a little time to grow up. It's a little slower growing, but once it gets there, it creates a really nice buffer. For the ultimate privacy, there's viburnums, or there's arborvitas that are great, and they'll tolerate a little bit of shade. I especially like the emerald, the grand, coming up with that.
Grandiflora?
There's some of the arborvitas are so subject to deer damage, and depends if you're an urban area and you don't have a lot of deer, then you can use whatever you want.
We are talking today with Joel Kressel, landscape architect and owner and president of Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa. It's great to have him with us. Brian emailed, what are some good options for outdoor lighting for an outdoor space? That's all, well, in this case, already been designed and built, but is underlit.
You know, it's lighting has evolved so much over the last 10 to 15 years. It used to be that the only best option and good option was line voltage. And just lighting fixtures that would be similar to ones that you would use in your house. And line voltage is still it's outstanding choice for lighting. You get the most wide of light when you're, and you have the least amount of problems. Sometimes when they had those old Malibu lights, the low voltage lighting,
yeah,
they were awful because there just wasn't enough voltage going through the line, and the connections would always corrode, and it was always going to be problematic, and you're constantly changing the little bulbs. Well, now we have lighting that's much more, it's much better. It's the low voltage lighting nowadays is incredible. With you get a lot more lumens, or they're shooting out a much brighter light, and there's a lot of color changing lights. There's so many options, and it all depends on your budget. But proper lighting, you gotta put enough lights in so that you have enough lumens, and that's all something that you need to discuss with your designer to make sure that we have enough lights. Mm-hmm. Larger trees in the I'll put 3 lights per large tree to illuminate the canopy. If the tree is like 18 inches or in diameter or larger, with a, let's say it's a maple tree and it's got a large overhanging canopy, I'll have 3 lights in that. Smaller plants, if I'm lighting, doing an uplighting, I'll have 2 lights. And then naturally you want to have path lights. And one of the things that you have to be considerate of is that you don't want to illuminate it so much that you're scaring away your neighbors, and that you're making your house, too bright. And so most of the lighting in the low voltage range of lighting is indirect lighting. And the lighting shoots down on the ground to illuminate the ground, and then it bounces back. And or it shoots up into the trees and reflects back down to illuminate the space. But you shouldn't be looking at any hot spots of light. So the key is to have all your lights and the bulbs actually screened. LED lights are the lights that we're using right now in the low voltage lighting. And we've really gotten away from doing the line voltage, except on possibly commercial sites we're still doing it. But line voltage, all that we're doing is pretty much LED, and it gives us all the light that we need. Also, I love using in retaining walls and steps. I love using the step light, and the fixtures are so small that you can barely see them. You barely notice that they're there, but then you get a nice illumination that will drip down the face of the retaining walls and will illuminate steps so that you can go up and down. So there's a lot of things that can be done with lighting, and it's a lot of fun. I love lighting.
Yeah that's I mean, you're creating a really nice picture in my head when you were talking about that wall.
At my house I have color changing lights, and so I changed the themes to reflect the holidays. So at Christmas time, they're all flashing red and green, which saves me a lot of time setting up Christmas lights in the wintertime. I'm not having to go out there and get my fingers cold. And, over the 4th of July, I just had them red, white, and blue. And, I did that Memorial Day. And then for Valentine's Day, they're all red. And St. Patrick's Day, they're all green. And, it's kind of fun.
I'll admit that I do the same darn thing. Oh, man. We had a question from or comment from Paula in Winnicott. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I have a question about dwarf Alberta spruce trees. I have 2 on opposite sides of the house, west and east, and they are about 10 to 12 years old, always been healthy. Last winter, it seemed like they got really, must have been winter burned.
Yes.
The one on the east side is more protected, and it seemed to overcome it in the springtime and has budded out and looks okay. The other one is half brown still, and I tried pruning back some of the dead branches and basically look skeletonized. Is there anything I can do, or is it just done?
You know, it's that's a tough question because there's not a good answer, quite honestly. It's going to take a very, very, very long time for it to grow out. If the holes are small areas, you can, you know, they'll grow out in 4, 5, 6 years. If it's the whole side of the plant, it's probably, you know, take it out and replace it. Last winter was an awful winter for a lot of reasons. We had so little snowfall in southeastern Wisconsin, I know for sure. A lot of very, very cold weather. So the roots weren't protected. We had extremely cold weather, and then we'd have real warm periods. And then real warm periods, it would warm up the plant. The plant would get excited and start drawing water up, and then it would get real cold again. And then the sun would come along in the spring, and it would shine on the plant, and it burned the plant. And so we had so many factors environmentally that made last winter a really tough winter on plant material. I saw it on a lot of trees, silver maples even this year were very delayed in leafing out because of the harsh winter. Plants that you normally don't see. Hydrangeas are much smaller than they typically are this point in time. So with your plants, if you want to do it again, I would recommend that you cover it in the wintertime because it's really, in Winnicani, it's really a kind of a semi-hardy plant. It's not the hardiest of plants.
Makes good sense. Paula, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Joe Kressel, our guest from Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you with us for Garden Talk on WPR News. Right now, we're looking at landscaping. How about sort of some landscape, an outdoor living space for your area, for your backyard, perhaps? You ever do one in the front yard?
Yes. Yeah.
I wondered about that because most of the time I see them there in somebody's backyard. Oh, by the way, our guest is Joe Kressel of Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa.
You know, front yards have been, you know, part of, you know, for a long time, you know, everybody had, in the old days, everybody had a front porch, right, mm-hmm. with the rocking chairs and everything. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, and people still.
I still have one, by the way, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. So, a lot of people, the activity is on the street. A lot of homes have maybe a sunny side of the backyard might be really shaded, and the front yard is sunny in the afternoon, or maybe has a western exposure, and people want to sit out in the front of their house, and because that's where the activity, and they want to watch the people walking up and down the sidewalk or whatever, and so we do front patios all the time. It's and smaller lots, you know, like you might find in Whitefish Bay. And, you know, I've done several of those. That's a common thing.
So even with not a lot of space in the front, you can do something?
Well, you know, you're maybe not going to put a barbecue and, you know, and all that stuff up in the front. But certainly make a sitting area, a place to sit and you know, watch the world go by. It's great.
Well, I love my front porch.
Yeah. That's for sure. I even have a refrigerator strategically located just inside.
So can you reach in and get something to drink?
People right. come by, and every once in a while, somebody will stop and talk, and then, well, maybe we'll have a beverage while sitting on the front porch, and I don't have to run to the basement.
That's very smart, very smart.
I wanted to talk about fire pits, because that's something that a lot of people have or would like to have.
There are more and more fire pits, you know, or people are asking for them. And you know, when you think about it, fire pits have been around for a long time. You know, Native American Indians, you know, they sat around the fire. And there's something, you know, that regenerates the soul, I think, sitting around a fire that is really exciting and really good. And Jens Jensen, you know, back in the mid-1900s, really, maybe was one of the landscape architects that promoted the council ring and the, you know, the experience of sitting around a fire pit. And, you know, he had one that he built in the clearing in Door County that was very popular. And today it's just growing and growing. And you know, I can speak from personal experience, you know, just like the outdoor kitchen, we go out to the fire pit almost every night and sit there. Now, there's so many different types to do it.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because you've got, well, in the first place, you've got solid in place or you've got portable.
Well, there's, and the price range can go from, you know, less than $100, you know, way up to thousands of dollars. And it all depends on how you want to use it and how, you know, what are you going to be burning? And so on the portable end of it, there's small fire pits that will burn wood that will be, you know, quite portable. And I know Weber has one, and there's a Solo, or I can't remember the name of exactly, that's a nice little fire pit. And I've had clients where we've created like a council ring with just some boulders and put one of those Solos in the middle of it. And it's been, you know, that becomes their fire pit. There's also ones that are like tabletop fire pits that are propane that are portable, that might be a coffee table that converts into a fire pit. You take the lid off of it, and then it's no longer a coffee table, and you use it as a fire pit. And then it just goes on to wood burning fire pits and made of all different materials, and even fireplaces are also somewhat common, depending on the location and where you want it. I think the top of the line, and it's what I have at my house, and a lot of my neighbor saw what I was doing, and now my neighbor has one too. It's a gas fire pit, and it's so easy to use. It's connected to the gas line of your house and runs off of natural gas, and you can adjust it, and you don't have to have carry in wood, and you don't have the mess of ants and all the little, you know, animals that kind of nest in the wood pile. And it's a much cleaner way to have a fire pit, and it's instant. You just turn it on and you have fire, and when you're done, you turn it off, and it's very nice. There's very little risk of, you know, burning embers, catching your house on fire, or anything like that. So the codes are much more lenient with gas-fed fireplaces, where wood-burning fireplaces sometimes, or fire pits, are more restrictive with codes. But then again, you know, the wood-burning fire has a nostalgia of the smell of burning wood, and it creates a real warm sensation as well. So it's just a little bit more work, but considerably cheaper.
Yeah, considerably cheaper. But I was instantly thinking about the fact that the smoke always seems to be blowing right straight in my face, no matter where I move around the...
you know what's kind of neat about the gas fire plant is it keeps the mosquitoes away. And we find that this winter, you know, even there was, or this summer rather, it was just like a few days ago when it was like in the 90s, we had the fire going in the fire pit, and only, you know, we kept the fire very low, but the gas flames kept the mosquitoes away, and we didn't have any, and we just sat there and watched the fireflies.
Well, what are the most, I you know, you've been doing this a long time. Are there, what are the kind of the best trends in your mind, or the most popular trends of the last 5-10 years?
Oh, gee, that's tough. You know, I think one of my favorite trends is you know, the trend that's probably old as time, and that's using natural materials. Mm-hmm. And for me, natural materials, natural stones, natural things that are found, you know, in local quarries and local fields, and clay bricks, to me, is by far the best way to go. I like natural materials over, you know, concrete products. And so I think that's one of the old trends that I like to promote as a new trend as well.
I think that's great. How has business been for you?
Sensational. Yeah. we're real busy. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a good year.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Is Cynthia emailed, I should have brought this up. What kind of difference can a well-designed outdoor space make to a home's resale value?
It makes a difference, you know. It makes a difference, you know. It in terms of curb appeal and the way the house looks, you're not always going to get 100% of your dollars back when you're landscaping. It depends on the condition and the type, but you're going to get at least 50% of your investment back when you sell the house, and sometimes 100%. It all depends on the condition of the house, the condition of the existing landscape. But it certainly is going to draw traffic to your home, and it's going to maybe get you in a situation where you get in a bidding war with other homes that are for sale, and because your home looks better. And curb appeal is one of the number one things that people look for when selling a home.
I was thinking about my own situation when the home I bought, my daughter was little, or 5 years old, and I wanted a back lawn space that was big enough for her to kick a soccer ball around, and a two-car garage with I could put a basketball hoop on it so she could shoot baskets. Now she's gone.
Yes, no more basketball hoop.
And now I'm looking at that back lawn, and I wonder if this happens in your line of work, that people say, you know what, maybe it's time to put in a back patio.
You know, I think you're onto something, because that happens all the time. I think, you know, early on when in people's lives, you know, you're focusing on your children and raising your children, and then once you're the empty nester, and that's when I think a majority, and that you focus on the interior of the house first when you move into a home.
Yeah,
oftentimes, and then as time evolves, it seems most of our customers are more mature. They've been living in their house a while. The home interior is done, and now they're kind of tired with the outside, and they want to improve it.
Yeah, well, I've been pondering that and wondering, well, if I did that, the next person who came maybe with young kids might not want it.
Well, they might want it. You know, it certainly might sell the house quicker.
If there's any realtors listening, I am not planning to sell my house anytime soon.
don't call.
Don't call for that. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, Joe.
Pleasure's all mine.
So much fun, and hope we have a chance to do this again. Hope we meet down the road again and do this. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. My pleasure.
Joe Kressel, he's been doing this a long time, landscape architect and the owner and president of Hawks Landscape in Wauwatosa. I just received an honor from their local community for their work. So that's kind of, we didn't get into that, but it's kind of a nice to know that here's a company that's been going on for 150 years and still thriving in our state. Well, stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.